Janie Lee Grace. Welcome to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio. Hi and welcome to the show. It's UK Health Radio. This is Janie Lee Grace with you, and it's the first week that I'm bringing you a clip from Dr. Bumi Abuaba, who was my guest, of course, on my last show. We did an in-depth chat about food addiction and about cravings, and Bumi has got these like series of tips. So we thought, rather than throw it all at you at once, we'll deliver it over the course of the next few shows that I'm doing. So a little bit later on, you'll get to hear Bumi with her first tip, if you like, around freedom from cravings, which of course is a topic that I speak about a lot. And it fits very well with my guest this week. Jane Thurnell Reed is just the most amazing woman. I know she won't mind me saying she's in her 70s, because I think she's shocked herself at just how incredibly fit and healthy she is. Jane has done an awful lot of stuff for us in the Sober Club, around fitness, around lifting weights. She has a huge Instagram following, but she's also incredibly knowledgeable. She's written a lot of books in her life. She's very knowledgeable about holistic living and holistic health. And she's decided to tackle the very tricky topic of weight management. But rather than do the usual stuff, what Jane has done is taken a completely scientific approach. And it's really very interesting, looking at the myths that we assume are correct around how we manage our weight. And she's looked at what little things might really actually make a difference. So it's a very relatable book. And I thought you might really enjoy listening to Jane. So here she is. Well, one of the topics that we have on our mind an awful lot when we ditch the booze, and when we haven't, in fact, is weight management. I doubt very much whether there is a woman listening to this who has not been on a diet at one time or other, some kind of weight loss program, some kind of way of managing their weight, whether losing it, gaining it, whatever that might be. It's a massive, massive topic. And I'm so thrilled that my guest is so unbelievably knowledgeable and helpful and realistic. Jane Thurnell Reed is an author and a blogger on health and well-being and fitness as well, of course. Welcome, Jane.
Thank you very much indeed.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining me. We've met, of course, and I love your approach. You've also done something for us in the Sober Club before around fitness, around sort of lifting weights, no matter what age you are. And I know that's definitely something that's never held you back. I know you believe that we just should just get on with all of it, whatever age we are, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So this new book, really intriguing book, 190 Weight Loss Hacks, What the Evidence Says. Well, first of all, why 190? I'm desperate to know.
Well, one of the things I decided was that I didn't want to put any fluff in it. And if you've been on the internet looking for tips to lose weight, you'll know there's a lot of fluff out there. Mm. And I was determined not to have any fluff in it. At one point, I was aiming for 200. At one point, I had 216. And I was thinking, oh, can I have 216? I'm not sure about this. But then I very ruthlessly looked at them all and said, do they deserve to be in the book? Mm. And so I ended up with 190 and thought, I'm not going to make it 200 because, you know, I would be putting fluff in the book.
Yeah.
And I don't want fluff in it.
Yeah. Well, it's really good because it's totally dip-in-able. And also, you know, it's really fascinating because you do dispel some myths, right? There are things that we all think we know about weight loss and weight management, right? And yeah. you've clearly done the research. I mean, tell us a bit about your background and what led you to wanting to write this book.
I have a background in complementary therapy. Before that, I was a university lecturer. And I've always been interested in self-help, but self-help with a evidence-based self-help.
Yeah.
And I was really aware of how many people are struggling to lose weight. In the US, the CDC says in the US, 49.6, is something like 49% of adults want to lose weight.
Mm.
I mean, it's huge. It's not just women, it's men as well, teenagers, some children.
Yeah.
It's just a huge issue. And it's very clear to me that people aren't doing it correctly. Because otherwise we wouldn't have 49% wanting to lose weight. They would have done it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is such a complex topic. I don't know how far we'll get into it today, but I think at least if we can dispel a few myths and get a few good tips from you, you know, that's a good start. But, you know, I find myself sort of swaying between the kind of approach, which is, you know, actually just love yourself as you are, for God's sake. You know, that lovely poem by Holly Holden, you know, I ask my body, you know, what should I do today? Should I have a green smoothie? Should I do this? Should I do that? And the end resolves as something like, actually, could you just love me like this? You know, and there is an absolute thread of that running through everything that I do. But by the same token, you know, I do completely realize that because of the stress, because of all the stuff we carry, because of the poor choices we make, because of the fact that the food industry, a lot of what they create isn't even food, for God's sake.
Yeah.
It's all built up to meaning that some of us carry more weight than is, you know, healthy for us. And ultimately, that's what it's got to be about, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. But I mean, people, obviously, a lot of people want to lose weight, but have that seesaw approach to it. Like, you know, it doesn't matter what I weigh, it matters what I feel like inside. And then, okay, I'm going to go on a diet and, you know, something really strict and do lots of exercise and things. But for me, the big thing about it is that weight loss is part of a much more a wider approach to your life and your well-being. Mm. One of the people who read my book very early on said to me, it's full of life hacks. It's not just about weight loss.
Yeah, exactly. That's really what I was trying to get at. That's exactly it, isn't it? There are so many people who do lose weight and find they most certainly are not happy. In fact, it hasn't changed their mindset in any way at all. As you say, it's actually about everything else. A little bit like not drinking is. You've got to kind of lay those foundations, you know. And there are an awful lot of pieces in the book that tie in really well with the work that we do around ditching the booze. Let's just get straight in then with some of the things you feature in the book. Now, one thing I think, in fact, I think number one, actually, weight loss hack number one, you talk about willpower.
Yeah.
Now, you know, tell us what you know about willpower, because when we want to stop drinking or when we want to go on a diet or we want to lose weight, we all have this kind of thinking, oh my God, I just need willpower.
Yeah. Well, the question I ask is willpower limited? Or do we have boundless willpower? Now, most of us say willpower is definitely limited. And in the 1990s, some researchers did some work and said willpower is limited. Mm. You have a certain amount of willpower in the day. And as the day wears on, you run out of willpower. And what happens when you get to the evening? You get tempted to drink or you get tempted to eat, even though you have decided you're not going to do that, you still start doing it because the explanation here is that you willpower is limited. You've run out of willpower. So that was in the 1990s, and of course that's a really despairing thing, the idea that your willpower is limited, because if your willpower is limited, you're not going to be able to resist the alcohol or the food in the snacks in the evening. But more people started doing research, and a lot of them couldn't replicate the initial study. They couldn't get the same results. So there was question marks about that. And then somebody did some research where they explained to part of the group that willpower was limited, and this had been shown by research. And another group were not told that, right? So the first group were told that willpower was limited. The second group weren't told that. And hey ho, what happened? The ones who believed, because they'd been told that willpower was limited, had limited willpower. And so they'd get to the evening, wouldn't be able to resist things. So in other words, if you believe willpower is limited, it is.
Yeah. There's that lovely sentence, isn't it? If you think you can, you can.
Yes.
You
yes.
can't, you can't.
No.
Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, just when I say this to people, people go, yeah, but I still can't resist things in the evening. So what's going on? If it's not willpower, what is it? And very often it's tiredness. Yeah. Because when we're tired, we find it much harder to resist things. We're much more likely to reach for the, you know, the chocolate whatever. Bar,
yeah. Yeah.
A glass of wine to make us feel better or whatever it happens to be. And so actually one of the things you need to think about if you don't have the willpower in the evening is maybe going to bed earlier. The later you go to bed, the more likely you are to eat. And if you go to bed earlier, that helps the hormones, which will help you lose weight anyway. Mm. And really look at what you're doing in terms of sleep so that you can get more sleep.
Yeah, I know sleep is something you cover. I was going to come on to that in a minute. But on that note, it's interesting you mentioned that because you use the same lovely little tool, HALT, H-A-L-T, and recommend that people ask themselves that, which is exactly what I do with, you know, when people want to stop drinking, you know, before you, when you actually recognize these thoughts, ask yourself, is it actually that I'm hungry, like actually hungry for proper food, you know, am I angry, am I lonely or tired? And it is amazing how overeating or emotional eating is so linked with actually being angry or furious or guilty or upset about something or stressed, you know, or being lonely. It's all, it's nearly always about filling that void, isn't it?
Yes and that's not a quick solution. Neither is the sleep one a quick solution. It's not like, oh, okay, I've got to get more sleep. Right, that's it. Done, sorted. You know, something that you might have to work at. You might have to look at what's called sleep hygiene, you know, switching off computers earlier and so on. Yeah.
On the just on sleep then, just tell us what else. I mean, tell us how it affects weight because, you know, I've heard this before that getting a good night's sleep affects, you know, will have an impact on your ability to lose weight if you're trying to lose weight.
Yeah.
But then is there a thing that you can have too much sleep?
I mean, obviously, if you get less, if you sleep a lot, then you're less active, so you're going to need less calories. But basically, you need some solid sleep because otherwise it triggers the hormones that next day are going to make you hungry. There's also research which has shown that if you have a bad night's sleep and you go shopping for groceries and food, you're more likely to buy lots of treats and things.
Yeah.
Than whereas if you've had a good night's sleep, you're less likely to do that.
Yeah. And I know you mentioned things like late night munchies as well, which of course won't happen if you tuck yourself in bed.
Yes.
And also, what about
another
time?
Another thing there is to clean your teeth after dinner.
Yeah.
Preferably with a strong peppermint toothpaste.
Yeah, that's a great one. Then you don't fancy eating after that.
Yeah. It tends to stop you eating because your body is like, yeah. And peppermint has been shown to decrease appetite.
Mm.
So you need something, a very strong peppermint toothpaste, have your dinner, clean your teeth.
Mm.
It doesn't mean you won't, but you're less likely to eat later on in the evening.
Absolutely. I mean, talking about timings, what's your view on you know, whether certain times that we should eat and whether certain people should eat at different times?
I mean, there's all sorts of different, the research on this is really varied. I mean, you take things like intermittent fasting. For some people, that seems to work really well. For other people, it doesn't. For most people, it seems to work for most people that at least you have, say, 12 hours or more without eating anything.
Yeah, so if you have your last meal at 8, don't have your breakfast till 9 kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
The problem with that is it can be quite difficult to organise given people's social life, people's families and work commitments.
Yeah. And then what about the sort of the obvious things that I know people will want to know? Like, if you've ditched the booze, you get cravings for sugar. You know, you have the chocolate cravings. You know, what can you tell us about all of that?
I mean, if you eat a lot of sugar, you probably know this already. Sugar drops your, you get a nice happy spike and then your blood sugar goes down and you want more sugary things. I have found, and I don't know where I originally found this, but if you crave chocolate, often a zinc supplement will reduce the craving right down. I don't remember where I first heard that. And I've passed that on to quite a few people and they've gone, oh, that's magical. It's absolutely magical. I take a zinc supplement and now I don't, you know, I don't eat, crave chocolate like I used to. When I was researching the book, I looked for the research to back that up and I couldn't find it anywhere. I still decided, I decided to include
it in anyway. Because
I had the research from people I told.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Let's cut to the stuff that I know that people are going to really want to know, such as does exercising make any difference?
It doesn't seem to make a huge amount of difference while you're losing weight. It does once you've lost it. If you're trying to maintain your weight loss, then there's loads and loads and loads of evidence. The two ways to maintain your weight loss, or if you are at a weight you're happy with but worried about putting weight on, is to take exercise and weigh yourself at least once a week. A lot of people actually recommend once a day.
Wow. Gosh, that's a surprise. And then what about...
And that's the thing about the book. There's so much in it that is actually surprising.
It is surprising. Yeah. But what about when people plateau? Actually, someone sent me a question. I won't read it all because it's quite long, but someone was saying that they put on about 3 stone during the perimenopause. She's saying she was a healthy size 12, seems like loads of exercise by the looks of it, et cetera, swimming, but has now put a lot of weight on. She says she's got some estrogen, progesterone, so she's talking about HRT, obviously, and is still doing workouts, tried the 800 diet. That's where you kind of only have 800 calories, isn't it, for a couple of days a week, and lost 5 pounds, but unsustainable, loss is really low, still doing loads of exercise, weight training, eating a high protein diet, literally lost no weight. My trainer is a bit confused. Doing Pilates, haven't lost any weight since I stopped drinking 3 months ago. That surprises me as well. She's saying, I have asked for a blood test. I may be borderline diabetic with high cholesterol, but my thyroid is fine. I mean, there's an awful lot in there, but ultimately I think it probably boils down to one of the things in your book that I know you talk about, which is, you know, the kind of weight loss plateau, or the person who seemingly is not losing weight despite doing allegedly all the right things.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that the research suggests is that people do actually get a bit fed up.
Yeah.
And they plateau, and they're allowed, you know, there's a bit extra creeping in all over the place.
Yeah.
But because we have this concept of the plateau, then people assume they're on a plateau. They've got to the weight loss plateau rather than thinking, am I actually still being as careful about what I eat?
Mm.
I mean, it's the same. I'm in the process of now writing a book on menopause weight loss, you know, specifically about that. And I mean, it's interesting there that it's a similar sort of thing in that the research shows that a lot of women will put on a couple of pounds or 3 pounds or whatever it is during the menopause and go, oh, it's the menopause. Whereas if you put on 3 or 4 pounds in your 30s, you'd go, I put on 3 pounds. What the hell's going on? Oh, I know. I've started putting sugar in my coffee again or whatever. You know, You start to look at what's changed about you and your behaviour rather than about, whereas the menopause is, oh, I don't need to look at myself and my behaviour. What I need to look at, it's because of the menopause that I put the weight on.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. But isn't there also a thinking that, you know, as certainly for you know, as girls, as we get older, many of us do fill out a bit. Isn't that just completely natural? I mean, we're not going to have the same body that we had when we're in our 20s, are we?
Well, I think it seems to move. The fat moves. I can see people.
There's certainly quite a lot of jiggling going on.
I don't mean like it jiggles, but it does do that. But it moves from the hips to the belly. At perimenopause, menopause time. Mm. So it actually becomes in a way more obvious if you're carrying a belly every time you sit down. That's much more obvious than carrying the weight on your hips.
Mm. I mean, it can't be healthy, can it, for someone who is, you know, menopausal and probably got an awful lot going on in their life to have to be focused on just on losing weight. It's not quite right, is it?
No, I would totally and utterly agree with you. I think, sadly, I mean, that's how society has organised us to. I mean, it's really interesting because it's very much somebody's done research on media, and over the last 20, 30 years, we are being given responsibility for our weight, rather than manufacturers being responsible for some of it.
Mm, absolutely.
So if you're fat, it's because you aren't, you're weak-willed, don't have any self-discipline, don't have any self-respect. It's nothing to do with the manufacturers. So the manufacturers are actually very deliberately trying to reinforce the idea that it's all about personal responsibility. Now, of course, there is a personal responsibility element in this. I'm not saying, it's not our personal responsibility, but it's made incredibly complex by what manufacturers are doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, back on what we were talking about, it's also a case of, well, what is okay anyway? You know, we talk about fat shaming. And part of what's going on here is that, you know, when my mum was young, you wouldn't have had the same media coverage or the same perception of what of a woman needing to look perfect. I mean, men as well, but you know, you wouldn't have had that standard to try to adhere to. And now, you know, quite honestly, I do, you know, I actually do fear for my daughter's generation. I really do, you know, unless you look a certain way and you are a size zero, you know, to quote all of that, but with a big bum, presumably, or whatever the hell the trend is, then you know, you're not seen as okay. No wonder we've got issues with anxiety and mental health and people not feeling they're good enough.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. I think there is some movement the other way. You know, I think people are beginning to recognise the dreadful harm that does. And so there is more of a movement away from it, but it's still there. And the evidence shows that fat shaming actually doesn't help people lose weight.
No, I'm sure it doesn't.
It absolutely doesn't. Even when it's a bit like the alcohol thing, even when people do it with very good intentions, you know, if you've got an overweight partner telling them, you know, saying things like, you know, telling them they're looking really fat or you need to go on a diet or you shouldn't be eating that because, you know, you weigh too much to be eating a biscuit or whatever it happens to be. doesn't help people at all.
No, I can absolutely imagine that. Jane, the book is great. 190 Weight Loss Hacks, What the Evidence Says. Just give us your website address so people can find out more information.
It's janethurnellreid.com. Dreadful name to spell. J-A-N-E.
I'll put it in the okay. Show notes, so yeah. Don't worry, that's fine. Brilliant. Jane, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Jane Thurnell, read and check out that book, and you'll find all that information in the various notes and blog posts that we put out. And as promised, Dr. Bumi Abowaba.
Hello, this is Dr. Bumi, the food addiction coach, bringing you the first of a four-part miniseries of tips and ideas around beating food cravings to gain a healthy relationship with food, regain control, and get your power back and thrive. In today's episode, I'm going to talk about the breakup, ending your unhealthy relationship with food. So let's look at some of the reasons behind our eating patterns and why we eat the way we do. Let's investigate how behaviours can start from childhood and how potentially food marketing and diet culture can really mess things up for us. If you're unfamiliar with this concept, it can seem a little alien to refer to our connection with food as a relationship. A healthy food relationship is allowed to be enjoyable. There are no strict rules or restrictions, except for maybe you're having to avoid things for medical reasons. And you have a good connection with your body's appetite cues. You honour your hunger and you don't ignore it, and you respect your fullness. An unhealthy relationship with food includes eating when you're not hungry, perhaps to deal with negative emotions. It also includes food rules and restrictions or changing the way you eat to manage your weight. At the extreme end, it includes eating disorders such as binge eating disorder and food addiction, which can lead to feelings of guilt and shame. Unfortunately, these rules could have rubbed off on you as a child, which are then repeated over the years. Our childhood experience of food and eating can shape our adult food relationships and the way we think about and feel about food. We can all probably recall the part food played in our lives when we were growing up, whether this was positive or negative. Think back to your own childhood. What foods did your parents offer you? Were you told to clean your plate, or were certain foods restricted? Think about how this may shape how you feel about food now. Our parents or other people we grew up with influence our behaviours and attitudes towards food, and it's not just our immediate family who influences, but also wider family members such as grandparents or friends. As adults, we can find ourselves adopting similar food habits to our parents, and some of these can be unconscious and we don't always make the connection to our childhood days. If our eating behaviours as a child were commented on, this could have a massive impact as in childhood and into adulthood. Whilst we may remember being praised for eating something as a child, we may also remember being criticised for not eating something or eating too much. If food was used as a reward in childhood, we may still have that same attitude as adults, rewarding ourselves with certain foods after a difficult day, or only feeling we deserve certain foods if we worked hard enough and earned them. And we can feel guilty about eating certain things if we're labelling them as treat or reward. If we're still restricting particular foods as adults, this can lead to cravings and binge eating. Maybe you've experienced comments on your body size, or you were told that you were greedy, and you may even have been put on a diet to lose weight. This can have a huge impact on how we feel about ourselves and influence our eating behaviour right into adulthood. Food may also have been associated with negative emotions such as stress, fear, anxiety, or feeling deprived, which can trigger non-hunger eating, which may lead to. The purpose of this exercise is not to make you feel bad, blame or shame you. It's just to raise awareness so that we can start to acknowledge it and empower ourselves. Now, let's look up some messed up beliefs about food, dieting and food marketing. Just think about this. You sat flipping through your favourite magazine, you sat having your cup of coffee, cup of tea, watching TV for about an hour. And in the hour, you're going to be watching a few commercials about food. Most of them commercials will be around fast foods, desserts, chocolates, fizzy drinks, alcohol. And these messages convey how fun and delicious and tasty they are, which kind of suggests that everything else is bland and boring and so not cool. And at the same time, the magazine that you're flipping through has the latest diet, weight loss and exercise articles. Trendy, cool, buzzwords galore, Photoshop models, airbrushed to heaven and back. And the message you get from this is the only acceptable body is the perfect one. Bombarded with unhealthy and conflicting information, and not just for that hour that you've been sitting there, but you've probably been exposed to this over a period of 10, 20 years upwards, so that you have been exposed to this daily. We may have an entire country of confused people with messed up views around food, eating, dieting, and body image. And this is the one reason why yo-yo dieting is so prevalent today. So action for today. Step one. Let's look at the food behaviours that get in the way of experiencing food freedom. And one way to begin to figure out which foods are impacting your life physically, emotionally and mentally is for you to just write a list of all the foods that maybe you've binged on, that you've started eating and you couldn't stop, that you feel you couldn't live without and that you spend a lot of time thinking about. Step two, just write how do you feel after you've eaten those foods? Do you feel you can swap those for healthier alternatives? Next week, I have another tip for you. Change your mindset, change your eating. This is Dr. Bummy. For more information, go to www.thefoodaddictioncoach.co.uk.
So there'll be another tip from Bummy in the next show and something else that we can really take away towards freedom from cravings. Don't forget to join me regularly on UK Health Radio, and don't forget you can go back through the archives as well. Sometimes we forget there's all these amazing shows lined up. I was thinking the other day, you know, over the years I've interviewed some amazing people. I'm really lucky to have access to some great people. Very exciting that the UK Health Radio Awards are happening too, and of course I'm running the Platinum Awards. We do that every year, and UK Health Radio are one of our media partners, which is super exciting. So if you have a natural and organic or eco brand and you're interested in entering, then get in touch. And if not, and you just want to vote for your favourites, that would be amazing too. So it's platinumawards.co.uk. I'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio.